Good evening and welcome to the broadcast. Glad you are with us tonight. We're going to be joined by Rebecca Wowser for an update on what's going on with the economy and banking, and a stunning brand new video clip out tonight of Janet Yellen before a congressional committee. This was sent to us by our guy, Wes Peters, who helps us with so much. I got a great team with Wes and with Rebecca, do I not? And Wes just sent me a stunning audio clip, video clip, just seconds before we went on the air. I listened to it very quickly and said, yes, we have to play this. We want to play it when we get Rebecca on, because she's going to want to see it if she hasn't already, and respond to it as well. It will answer the question that many of you have. What if my bank fails? Will my bank now get the treatment by the feds that SVB Bank got, the Silicon Valley Bank got? Well, not so fast. Hold your horses, as the old saying goes, because those rules will be determined as we move forward by, well, the elite. They'll decide who gets treatment of that nature and who doesn't. Sounds like to me, I think I'm not an attorney, and I don't play one on television. So I hear, though, that there are attorneys are saying there may be legal issues under the 14th Amendment and equal protections under the law. So when the next bank failure happens, if they don't do what they did for SVB Bank, will that trigger lawsuits? Well, there's going to be plenty of news to report on, right? We're not going to run out of news to report, are we? So we'll get to that clip here in just 1 minute. And then we'll be joined by Alex Newman. We have the World Health Organization, which is the United Nations, meeting in May to pass some amendments and to push through this international pandemic treaty that our, well, occupant of the White House is all for, and would turn our sovereignty over to the United Nations. But how much do you really know about the United Nations? What do you know about their history? Who founded them? Why they were founded? And what are their goals? What do you know about the United Nations when it comes to their view on Christians and the Jewish people? You might want to know. Oh, and is the United Nations involved at all in funding curriculum and teaching and programs that encourage Islamic jihadists to blow themselves up and kill Jews? Would the United Nations do that? And if they would and are, does that say anything about how the UN feels about the Jews in America? Or how about Jews around the world? What has the UN had to say about Christians? Now, this is important because if the WHO, which is really the UN, and we hear that the WHO is dominated by China as well. See, what does China think about Christians? Oh, I know. They kill them. They harvest their organs. Go look it up. They imprison them for preaching the gospel. You have to have a licensed church. So we're going to have a UN, Chinese, Communist Party-dominated World Health Organization. Then you got to throw in Bill Gates, his influence with WHO. This is who's going to have control over making major decisions about if you can even go to church. Maybe there'll be a great health crisis and the churches need to be shut down. That would never happen in America. Oh, wait a minute. It did. Huh. They might decide there's a big health crisis and they need to shut down your business, which is your livelihood, which is how you pay your mortgage and put food on the table. That would never happen in America. Wait a minute. It did. They might say that your kids can't go to school. You got to sit at home and be depressed and become scared and hopeless. Put your kid into great depression, not to mention behind on their academic career. That would never happen in America, but we all know it did. And many young people, sadly, committed suicide. So how much do you know about the United Nations? Because the UN, if the globalists should get their way in May, could be, well, dictating an awful lot to you and me. Alex Newman will join us as we talk about the history, the ideology, the worldview of the United Nations. Joining me now is Rebecca Wowser. She is with WowserWealth.com. She is a financial planner like none other. Very educated on what's happening and being very proactive for her client. She joins us tonight at my request again to help us break down what's happening since our last visit. Rebecca, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brandon. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. I don't know, have you seen what Janet Yellen said today before a congressional committee? Did you get a chance to watch that with your busy schedule today?
I had her testimony on, but obviously I'm busy all day, every day. So
you didn't get to hear it.
Yes, please play it.
I was hoping I would be able to teach you something tonight.
Yes,
since you're always
good.
Teaching us something. I thought I'd be able to scoop and get some news ahead of you tonight. Okay, so here we go. This is Mr. Langford, U.S. Senator, I think he's out of Oklahoma, if I remember correctly, asking a question of Janet Yellen, just posted a few hours ago. Here we go, guys, in the control room, need some audio. Here we go.
Dealing with on it. Will the deposits in every community bank in Oklahoma, regardless of their size, be fully insured now? Are they fully recovered? Every bank, every community bank in Oklahoma, regardless of the size of the deposit, will they get the same treatment that SVB just got or Signature Bank just got?
A bank only gets that treatment if a majority of the FDIC board, a supermajority of the Fed board, and I, in consultation with the president, determine that the failure to protect uninsured depositors would create systemic risk and significant economic and financial consequences.
So what is
and
your
we
plan?
Made that determination.
Right. So what is your
banks.
Plan to keep large depositors from moving their funds out of community banks into the big banks? We have seen the mergers of banks over the past decade. I'm concerned you're about to accelerate that by encouraging anyone who has a large deposit in a community bank to say, we're not going to make you whole, but if you go to one of our preferred banks, we will make you whole at that point.
That's certainly not something that we're encouraging.
That is happening right now.
That is happening because depositors are concerned about the bank failures that have happened and whether or not other banks could also fail.
It's happening because you're fully insured no matter what the amount is. If you're in a big bank, you're not fully insured if you're in a community bank.
Well, you're not fully insured. And
you were at Signature, it just barely met that threshold. You were at Signature.
Well, we felt that there was a serious risk of contagion that could have brought down and triggered runs on many banks, and that something, given that our judgment is that the banking system overall is safe and sound, depositors should have confidence in the system, and we took these actions.
So there's a special assessment that's been done on community banks in my state and all banks across the country. Was there any discussion that special assessment would only apply to the larger banks, or was it always assumed the special assessment would cover every bank, including rural banks in my state?
I'm not certain what the rules are around that. That's for the FDIC to determine.
It has been reported publicly that SVB had a large number of Chinese investors that are there, including some that were companies directly connected to the Chinese Communist Party. Will those individuals, companies, entities, and investors that are Chinese investors be made whole based on assessments in my banks in Oklahoma? So what I'm asking is, will my banks in Oklahoma pay a special assessment to be able to make Chinese investors whole from Silicon Valley Bank?
Uninsured investors will be made whole in that bank, and I suppose that could include foreign depositors, but I don't believe there's any legal basis to discriminate among uninsured.
I get it, but I'm just saying my community banks are going to pay this additional fee. It is always fascinating to me as well, the conversation that taxpayers are being made whole in this, that taxpayers are not going to have any kind of consequence on this. I'm sure my bankers are going to be very excited to know they no longer pay taxes, and their banks no longer pay taxes. Credit unions don't pay taxes, banks do. And so they're definitely taxpayers as well, and all banks make their revenue off of rates and fees and such to their account holders, which means every Oklahoman will pay higher fees in their community bank.
We're just going to have to move on.
Well, I bet you're going to have to move on. The guy's getting to too much truth. I'm not always a huge fan of Mr. Langford, but boy, he's nailing it there, is he not, Rebecca?
He has got it on the head, Brandon. And this is exactly what we talked about on Monday night, that you cannot pick and choose the winners and losers. That's fascism. That's crony capitalism. And this is exactly the Equal Protection Clause under the 14th Amendment. You know, we had too big to fail in 2008, 2009. You guys will remember clearly, oh, it's too big to fail. We've got to bail them out, right? So that was when the big banks were too big. And we had Lehman Brothers, AIG, Bank of America, all of these things, you know, too big to fail. They've changed that language. And now that the language has become systemically important, basically, there's about 7 to 8 banks in America that have been deemed GIC, which is globally systemically important, GSI rather. And so that means that these big banks, these global but US, you know, national banks that do international business are globally systemically important. And what Yellen has just said right there is SVB was determined by the FDIC by a supermajority and cleared by her and the President of the United States that they would go above and beyond the 250 limitation and make all depositors completely whole, even though the average deposit at SVB at collapse was over $2 million. So what they have done is basically created separate classes under their executive authority of the FDIC and the executive branch, which administers the Treasury Department. The Treasury Department is a part of the executive. And that definitely is in direct conflict with the constitutional equal protection that says all law must be applied equally among citizens. You cannot have, and he's making an excellent point, you cannot have a regional bank in Oklahoma paying a fee for an SVB bank that has Chinese depositors for Chinese venture capitalists that were quasi-American Chinese joint ventures that were going to IPO in the United States that are going to get be made completely whole based off of a fee that an Oklahoma regional bank is paying. And then the Oklahoma regional bank is not systemically important and therefore it's not fully bailed out. And now you have two depositors in the United States completely treated totally different under the law. And that is not going to fly. This is completely unconstitutional.
Are you shocked that she was that honest?
I don't think she was prepared. Like, as the fast as these things are moving, I don't think that they are prepared to deal with, you know, it's the law of unintended consequences. We start doing things because we think it's absolutely necessary and we don't actually think through, well, we can't afford to do this for every single bank. You know, your audience is very intelligent, Brandon, and they just need to realize the banking system is insolvent by design. It is designed to be insolvent.
Explain why you say that. I know it's the fractional reserve banking aspect of it, but just explain it. So, because we're always adding new people.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so let's talk about the money multiplier. Basically, if you have $100, you know, this is what it's supposed to be. This is not the reality. But what it's supposed to happen is I take $100 to a bank, any bank, credit union, whatever, and they keep $10 in reserves, 10% reserves, and $90 are able to lend out and create the multiplier effect of basically currency and cash flow and the money cycle. And that's how, you know, we create GDP, we create growth, we create do research and development, we come up with new products because we create a money creation through private lending. They're supposed to do all of the risk analysis, risk mitigation, only take, you know, risks that are worth taking on credible and, you know, investors that are solvent, that are going to be able to pay back the loan with interest. And that's how the solvency of banking occurs. And when you have, you know, an 80s SNL crisis, or you have certain things, you know, money being taken from HUD in the 80s by the federal government into China, that's a whole nother thing. But the point is, when you have these things come up, you understand that the banks are not capitalized. I mean, insurance companies are the most capitalized. They have to have so many dollars in reserve for every dollar of guaranteed death benefit. And the banks are completely undercapitalized by design, by fractional banking. And that's the system that we have had since 1913 and really commercial banking and the Federal Reserve and all of these things. And we're just at the end of this life cycle, Brandon. This is the end. This is the beginning of the end. Now, we have an emergency stability fund that's coming into play. JP Morgan said today that we could see 2 trillion dollars coming as a backstop for the banking system in the United States. And if you need to understand that as a perspective, Credit Suisse yesterday was counting on, and yesterday they lost 20%, on Wednesday they lost 20% of their market capitalization, and they were counting on Saudi National Bank to basically backstop them. That's one of their biggest backers. And at a Riyadh finance conference in Saudi Arabia yesterday, the Saudi Arabian finance minister said, we can't do anything else for Credit Suisse because we are at our 9.9% maximum investment from a regulatory perspective. We can't do anything more. So that's why their stock tanked. That's why we saw the entire world sort of reverberating of, oh my gosh, it's not just SVB, it's not just Signature, it's not just First Republic. This is going now. And Credit Suisse, by the way, has been really having difficulties for the last 18 months, dire. I thought this was going to happen with Credit Suisse last fall. So this was a shocker that they held on so long. But what happened yesterday when Saudi Arabia came out and said that, you then had the Swiss National Bank, the same Swiss National Bank that lost, by the way, $143 billion last year on exchange rate problems because of the strong U.S. dollar. That's the largest loss on Forex exchange they have had in their 116-year history. So they came out today and said they were going to backstop Credit Suisse to the tune of $54 billion. So let's just take Credit Suisse, the second largest bank in Zurich in Switzerland, and you take $54 billion. So two Credit Suisses would equal $100 billion. 10 of those would equal a trillion. So that's 20 Credit Suisses to basically equal a trillion. So that's 40 Credit Suisse failures to get us to $2 trillion, which is what JP Morgan came out today and said that the government is looking at needing to shore up the U.S. banking industry, because this is the end. This is the beginning of the end. They were going to pull out every stop now, Brandon, that you have ever seen ever possible. They are going to pull out every stop.
So when we came on the air Monday night, again, I don't give financial advice. You can do that. You're licensed and all that. I don't give financial advice. I give financial opinion and worldview analysis. When we came on the air, I think it was Monday night, and I said, I'm thankful in one degree that the Feds bought us time, because some people have not been doing very much, and now they're going to have a chance to go do something and realize what we were saying is true. Then there's maybe people like you and me that have been getting ready for this for decades, right? Yeah. And then, yet, there are those of us who say, all right, we're going to do X, Y, and Z over many years to get ready. And then if I see certain things happening, then I start putting in my final collapse of the economy stage. I have a plan of things I need to do when I believe we're reaching the end, and I won't pull the trigger on those things until I believe we're reaching the end, okay? So there's two things going on here, I think. One, those who've not been paying attention to us or thought we were kind of maybe crazy, and now they realize we're not, and they're going to go and do something to get ready. There's a lot of us in this audience who have spent decades getting ready, right, since the early 90s, because we read books like Larry Burkett's book, The Coming Economic Earthquake, and other books I read in the early 90s that changed my whole outlook on life and finances and how I conduct myself, right? So we've had decades to get ready thanks to guys like that. And then we have, like I said, the second group we're talking about has this plan of things we're going to say, when we see X, Y, and Z happen, we start doing this, this, and this. So this has allowed some people in those two groups to start making changes and to start making plans and procedures. So in one sense, it's. I said to my wife the other night, this is really God being favorable to us. God is being very favorable to us.
Wow.
And I mean us, you, me, this audience, others. God's
humanity.
Being very gracious to allow us to see this. Because some people can take some actions in the matter of just a few days to start making themselves much, much better off. And apparently people are doing that. So with that being said, you say it's starting to unravel. How much more time do you think people have to start making some of those decisions to protect their assets, their life savings?
Well, nothing. No time left. No. Because this could happen tomorrow, Brandon. They're going to pull out all the stops now. Like I said, this $2 trillion that JP Morgan, and JP Morgan obviously is the largest investment bank as far as derivatives go, 54 billion dollars of derivatives alone at JP Morgan. So JP Morgan coming out and saying this, you know, Jamie Dimon setting off the markets 3 months ago when you said there a hurricane, economic hurricane is coming. You know, they are aware of what is going on. There is no time left, Brandon, because it could happen any moment, right? It's so funny that you said this is God's favor, because that's exactly the words that were resonating in my head as you were saying these words. This is the favor of God giving people a warning. And I don't know that this is the final warning. I think that, you know, I have been very frustrated with God over these last 3 years because I am a type A personality and I want things done as soon as I know they're coming. I want them over with. And I have had to learn a great deal of patience through this long slog of a process globally that is, you know, literally, this is the changing of the world. This is the time that we have come to. We are at a predestined point in God's timeline. And I don't believe, I know that we talked last time that, you know, you think maybe that it's getting close to Revelations. I think we're not there yet. I think that there's an interruption first that's going to wake up a lot of people, because this world has, and even America, and of course America is a very unique country in that it was founded on this pursuit of faith. You know, we have all sort of gone down to this quagmire of hyper-consumerism, sexualism, genderism. Everything is everything, and it's so evil. And, you know, it's difficult. It's very difficult, because to live in this world as a Christian and to really want to stick to your beliefs and your faith and be out in the public sphere like I am trying to live this life, it's very hard because this world has disintegrated very quickly. But God is giving us some time here, and people should not waste a minute of it. So here's the irony, as you just saw the senator talking to Yellen about the fact that people are leaving the regional banks and going to the big banks. That is the exact opposite of what you should be doing. The exact opposite. And let me just give you a quick example as to why. Let's say that we leave regional banks and we go to the big four banks, okay? Citi, Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. We go to these four banks and something does start to break. The system does finally get to a point of collapse. Now you've got over 330 million people in the United States dealing with four institutions. Now, obviously, it's not going to be exactly that, but do you understand the quagmire weight of having to administer, you know, 50 million people's accounts? There's no private company on earth that has the infrastructure to handle what we're talking about.
You're talking about an accounting nightmare. How do you unravel that and balance the books and figure out where everything is at? That would take an army of accountants. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that just the human infrastructure requirement to talk to or deal with or respond to the inquiries of 50 million people all at the same time is not possible.
You're never going to get anyone on the phone.
It's not possible. It is humanly impossible. And so what you're having is them almost highlighting, look, if you are here, we're going to do this because it's one thing, but really it's these banks, these globally, you know, important banks that really we have to watch out for. And people are going to leave their credit unions, which, by the way, dumb, those credit unions are member owned, so they're completely managed differently. But you're going to go from credit unions and local banks to these big banks, and you're putting yourself into the fire. And of course, we know, Brandon, what's really coming is they're leveraging this. You know, don't think that this is not a part of a designed plan to collapse.
Thank you. Okay, that was my next question, Rebecca. Are they doing this to herd the sheep into, you know, trouble? Don't do that. But they're doing everything to encourage it. Is this a trap? Are they trying to herd the sheep out of the regional banks into the big banks? Is this a trap that they're trying to set?
I mean, I think that the big banks are already fully, they have enough customer deposits as is that it would be a disaster, right? But yes, we know that digital dollar, FedNow. We always said, you and I have been talking about this since I first joined, and basically said, hey, this is coming online May to July.
You were the one that told us that. You were the one that told us that. And I'm going to go to worldviewreport.com where we keep all our news stories, a lot of new news stories up there tonight. And she was the one that told our audience, hey, between May and July, they're going to roll this out. And sure enough, I went to FedNow, the website for the gov. There it is. Look at here, folks. If you go to worldviewreport.com, you guys want to show that? Worldviewreport.com, you'll see it right now as we're on the air live. Okay, well, I linked the wrong one. That's by the way, a great song, though. It just came out. We played that tonight. I'm going to find it real quick. But you just sent me the article, and it is over at Gateway Pundit. So I'm on the right website, wrong article. You came out and you sent me a text where we went on the air, and you said we should talk about this. And here it is right here. Now I got it. Here we go. Here it is. Federal Reserve will launch FedNow payment service in July. Okay, you were saying that. You broke that on our show saying that this was going to happen between May, and this was last year. Last year you said, Brandon, they're going to roll that out between May and July, and I looked online. Sure enough, they were. Now they've come out and saying they're going to do it by July. How interesting the timing of all this. Is this just too coincidental, Rebecca?
No, and I want to give out a shout out to Julie, who is a legislator in South Dakota, who reached out to me from your show, Brandon. So your show has got all kinds of legislators in the United States looking out. And she basically was talking to me about the South Dakota UCC that's coming across. UCC obviously stands for the Uniform Commercial Code. And the UCC is created and operated since 1952 by the Uniform Law Commission. And what has happened is they have promulgated the HB 1193, and this is what it's called in South Dakota, and it's a definition of money that has been edited to explicitly exclude decentralized finance cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, all of those stable coins. That will be explicitly excluded from the definition of money, and the definition of money will become something that the government approves as a medium of exchange, and there's an actual legal definition that could reach you.
Let me just break that down for the layman. Is this what the governor of South Dakota was warning about when she said that this was proposed to their legislature and about 20 states in total, 20 states where they would pass legislation written by special interest groups, by lobbyists, the legislature doesn't understand it, or they're not reading the law that they're about to vote on to understand, but what it's going to do in those 20 states or so is mean that there can be no competition to the government's central bank digital currency. So in other words, this is it, people. This is your only option. You have no other option in the state of South Dakota or Tennessee where it is they're trying to push this legislation. They will make it, the feds will make it illegal to have any other cryptocurrency, if you will, as a medium of exchange or classified as money. Here, is that what, do I have that right?
You have it exactly right. So I have said now, I've been on record nationally saying, going back probably 3 years now, even maybe sooner or earlier, stating that the second that Bitcoin started to be mainstream accepted as currency, that we would see exactly this. We would see uniform commercial code law that is going to define currency outside of decentralized finance, because you cannot have globally recognized decentralized crypto as money at the same time you have centralized central bank digital currencies that are controlled by central banks. You cannot have two systems at the same time. The central bank is looking for absolute totalitarian control, and they will have that because the currency will be over. It will be a voucher, an electronic voucher system. In fact, we should not call it currency at all. It is an electronic voucher system controlled by the central bank. And then the central bank in the United States is the Federal Reserve, and that is not a government entity. That is a private corporation created by charter in 1913. And so basically you're talking about the ending of all money as we know it and complete voucher control by a central bank, which is not even a government branch or government group in the United States. And it not only does that, but in order to do that, in order to have that totalitarian control, you must therefore then deem non-centralized digital currency, which is the decentralized blockchain cryptos that we have in existence now since Bitcoin, you have to say that those are not money and cannot be used as legal tender. And then you have absolutely technocratic control. And I just want to say, Brandon, we now on your show are identifying all the problems, but we are also now going to lay a framework for how this is going to get fixed going forward. And I can tell you that going forward, what we need to do is have a separately elected commission in Congress that is a republic democracy score. In other words, a constitutional republic needs to hire people that are just either lawyers or just regular citizens. They don't need to, you know, they need to go through every single bill that is ever submitted to Congress, whether it's at the state level or the federal level, and it needs a republic score. For freedom. We need a freedom score on every bill that is ever passed ever. And it, because, you know, I go to New York City, and before I ever walk into any restaurant, I can see clearly on the door the rating. You know, I can see A, I can see B. Hey, if I see a D, I'm not going in that thing. So I'm tired, and we are all tired of our entire government at the federal level and the state level being written by lobbyists that can sit around and write 600 pages that a state legislator who is making less than $100,000 a year is never going to read. And even if they did read it, they wouldn't understand it. We have got to get back to what keeps us free, because these laws are getting passed without even being understood by state legislatures.
Amen. Amen and amen. And by the way, I want to make a comment you said about Revelation, because you and I are actually in agreement. I don't believe Revelation has started to unfold yet. I think the stage is being set.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
To start unfolding. But I want to make sure my audience understands. I do agree with her, actually, that the book of Revelation has not started to unfold yet. It's not happening yet. I think the stage is being set for it to unfold. But I don't think the book is actually being I don't think the prophecies of that book are coming to pass yet. I think there are prophecies and the stage is being set for it to be fulfilled. So she and I are actually in agreement. And I meant to say that a while ago. Let me play a quick video that's in that article that's linked at our website, worldviewreport.com, tonight. And this is the government's own website. Okay, this is the government she's talking about. Listen to this.
Today, people and businesses expect to make and receive payments at the click of a button any time of the day, every day of the year. And most expect their financial institutions to offer or support payment services that meet the speed and convenience they seek. In fact, 3 in 4 businesses and 2/3 of consumers surveyed think it's important that their bank or credit union offer faster payments. Financial institutions interested in meeting these demands can use the Federal Reserve's upcoming FedNow service to build innovative payment offerings that can help them retain and attract customers and avoid losing out to the competition. With the FedNow service launching in 2023, the time to start preparing is now. What can financial institutions do to get ready? A bank or credit union should first get a sense of the demands and trends in the market. Let's take a look at how one financial institution might do this. Meet Jill, the CEO of Community Bank. Jill keeps a close eye on Community Bank's customer retention rates. She was surprised to see new research showing that nearly 2/3 of businesses and 1/3 of consumers indicated they would factor access to faster payments into future decisions on whether to switch financial institutions. Jill and her team looked at their own customer transactions and discovered an increasing number of customers moving funds to alternative payment services, such as digital wallets and mobile payment apps. This corresponded with a noticeable decline in customers' deposits and accounts at Community Bank. They knew they had to take action. Jill and team reviewed FedNow education tools and resources to understand how the service will work and how to prepare for it. They also learned about instant payment use cases, including account-to-account transfers, bill pay, and person-to-person transactions. These resources sparked ideas for solutions they could create using their internal technology or working with third-party providers to leverage the FedNow infrastructure. Next, Jill's team started assessing the needs of their customers. They looked at available customer data, conducted surveys, and talked to customers. The team learned that their small business customers want tools to better manage cash flow. For many, this means being able to send bills and receive payments more efficiently.
Now, I don't know about you, but They sure are making this awful positive and rosy, and it's about the free market and helping the small business owner. That's all a lie.
You know, Brandon, this is what we call in the law a red herring. Yep. Anytime, you know, you law school, you go on an exam, and there's like a page long fact, set of facts, and they always put all this stuff in there just meant to distract you, to take you off down this tangent so yep. that you don't see what's really going on here. Let me point out a couple things about this video that will jump out to your audience. First thing is, it's from the perspective of the bank. It's not from the perspective of us. Why? Because between Zelle, Cash App, you know, all of these instant cash transfers, we don't have a need now to have another faster system just through our bank, because we can just connect, you know, a bank account to Venmo or any of these things, and we can get instantaneous transfers. So what they are looking at is the bank is losing business. You see, the bank is having customers leave because they don't, you know, because they can do these other things. So it's from the perspective of the bank. So what they're firstly telling us is that commercial banking's utility is diminishing. And so instead of allowing the natural death cycle to occur in economic life cycles of a technology that is past its prime, like maybe commercial banking. No, we can't do that because we use the commercial banking system to run our basically fraudulent fiat currency system where we manipulate the entire world through our printing of money and controlling the money supply. So we have to have our commercial banks to do that. So we have to basically say that this is necessary and blah, 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 blah. The truth is that at the end of the day, you are looking eventually at the ending of all commercial lending anyways, because you're going to have a direct account with the Federal Reserve and a third party commercial lender is going to become superfluous. So eventually they will get rid of the third parties as well.
And if you go on the FedNow website, they talk about the fact that your business and you will have to have a Federal Reserve FedNow account. Nobody
digital
in this audience.
ID. Yes. That is how the digital ID is coming. So digital ID first, and of course, since this is so instantaneous, you see, Brandon, it's all connected. Because the payment is instantaneous and irretrievable, they must have a 100% infallible way of verifying who you are before you hit that send button. And that is requiring a digital ID. You know, I've seen video, I don't know if your audience has, I mean, we talk about revelations, but I've seen video already where there are vending machines installed in certain convenience stores that basically have scanners. They have scanners at the top that can read your forehead, and they have scanners, you know, on the side that can read your arm. And if you don't have whatever ID that you need, you can't even open the vending machine. You can't open the that cooler.
And in fact, there's no one in the convenience store to help you. It's all self-automated. I got Alex Newman coming up next, so I have to hurry along. But the interesting thing about this, Rebecca, also is that no one in this audience now has, that I would be aware of, would have a Federal Reserve account. No one. But you go to your local bank or you go online and you open one, and now your bank is going to become a direct agent for the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yes.
So your local bank will basically just be shuffling paper for the Federal Reserve. What's interesting to me is that this crisis has happened and it is spreading. And Yellen just said today, we just played it, that we cannot guarantee that any other bank that fails will get the same treatment. So, folks, it's a roll of the dice, and she said basically we'll decide. So if there's enough elite and famous hedge fund people, actors, actresses, then we might bail out that bank. But if there's just a lot of average common Americans, maybe not above the 250. So this is getting interesting, and it's all perfectly timed apparently now. We see that the Fed now is going to be ready to go in July. I was reading articles this week that the Biden regime would not allow a bailout of Silvergate. There were people who were ready to rush in and buy Silvergate, and the Biden regime said no. They wanted that bank to fail, which proves our point. They want the bank failures.
Silvergate obviously was a crypto facilitator bank. So they were, you know, I told you, I think maybe a couple of weeks back that what they were going to start doing now was debanking basically all of the crypto providers, so that you could no longer basically transfer your crypto into US dollars and, you know, everything except for Bitcoin. So they were going after the crypto bank, Silvergate was a crypto bank. And so for them, all the failure, all the better. You know, Brandon, anytime they use speed, and I know you got to run, but anytime they use speed, this is the same thing that they've used for 5G rollout. 5G rollout has nothing to do with speed. The speed is just not even almost humanly measurable. The difference when you're talking about 5G versus the earlier, you know, more earlier technologies. This is the 5G is 100% about frequency. It's about, it is used as a directed energy weapon, and people really need to look up where their 5G towers are near them. I mean, anything that's near 5G dies, animals, plants, human life, your cells, cancer, radiation. This is, I have all, I know this is going to sound dumb, but I make my family have all of our cell phone signals on non-5G. It's all coming together. Their ultimate plan now is, they feel, is coming together, and they have no idea what they're up against.
And the 5G.
It's not going to go their way.
And the 5G, they need the ability for more data. Is it not? Is it not about more data and tracking us? Is that one reason why they need the 5G? Because when you go to digital social credit scores, and all the cameras and everything, they're gonna need more powerful ways to have more bandwidth, if you will. 5G, is it not about more bandwidth for more data tracking on the population?
That's, they talk about speed, and when they're talking about speed, they're referencing the fact that you can send a lot larger data packets faster because the broadband capability is that much larger. So that's the same thing as speed, Brandon. That's just talking about upload and download times. But no, 5G is not about speed. It is about frequencies. The research is out there. The scientific research is there. So I'm just encouraging your audience
we're going to do some research.
Go look
that.
It up.
Yeah, we're going to do that. Look at this. I got two more things I got to have you cover real quick. Federal agencies. First Republic Bank rescued with $30 billion deposited. With $30 billion deposited from 11 banks. So in other words, 11 banks, apparently, you tell me, are we saying now 11 banks are rushing in to rescue this bank, First Republic?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because you see, they don't want to have to come out at the, you know, fourth day of the week when they came out on Monday morning. The president came out Monday morning before the markets opened and said, everything's going to be fine. We're going to completely make these depositors whole. They're trying to limit this as being seen as a contagion. So they don't want to have to come out and step in again. So you see a consortium of 30 banks coming in here to bail out the regional bank of First Republic. And that's why they're choosing to do it this way. Banks do lend overnight funds to other banks to meet reserve requirements, because as I said to you, we're supposed to have 10% reserves. We don't have 10% reserves in our banking system. If we knew our true reserves, we probably would not even be able to talk about it. So we don't have 10% reserves. We're supposed to, but we don't. And the way banks meet their reserve requirements is they take overnight loans if they're large enough directly from the Fed, if they're not large enough from correspondent banks, interbank lending overnight.
And in this one, it looks like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and JP Morgan Chase will each contribute about $5 billion apiece. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley will deposit about $2.5 billion, according to the bank's press release. So these banks rush in and help this bank keep from collapsing. What kind of deal do you think has been struck behind the scenes for these big banks? I mean, if you're running a big bank cabal, what kind of deal have they promised? What kind of deals the Federal Reserve and the Biden regime promised these banks? Hey, chip in, help keep this bank from going under because we're not quite ready for this yet. And in return, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. What kind of deals are they cutting behind the scenes?
Well, I think that certain C-suite members of very large, globally systemically important banks do know what's going on. They are clued in, I'm sure of it. But the smaller banks, probably not so much. And the bigger banks don't need to really be talked into anything. They understand what's going on. They understand where the banking system is. They absolutely know that we literally could have a complete and global total collapse because of the absolute amount of money that has been printed, shoved into the system in the last, since April of 2020. So we are literally coming up now on 3 years of this, and there's been too much printed too fast. Then that is reverberated with inflation, which is reverberated with higher interest rates. And the second the interest rates were at the levels they were at, people were leaving their banks taking deposits and buying, you know, U.S. treasuries and short-term notes and all of these things. So you saw, you know, reversal of deposits being held at banks and CDs into, you know, short-term treasuries. And it's just a liquidity-based event. When you have a system, as ours has been at least since 2008, 2009, that is based solely on continuous stimulus. We have been quantitative easing all the way up until the pandemic. And then obviously we had massive global stimulus injected into the entire earth because of the pandemic and the shutdown. So when you have that much of printing of money and then you abruptly stop and you start raising the cost of capital, you will in fact create a collapse, which is where we are at the beginning of now. So these banks know that it's definitely within their purview and their self-interest to stem this from happening before July when the FedNow platform is ready to go.
And so tomorrow's a Friday. They always time these on a Friday. So do you think we're going to hear of any bank failures tomorrow, Friday?
I mean, I would say that it's very feasible with the announcement of this potential exchange stability fund up to, you know, this $2 trillion that we're talking about, the federal government is talking about to back the banking system in the United States. And certainly the ECB, even though they raised interest rates 50 basis points, they obviously know that Swiss National Bank stepped in to save, at least for now, Credit Suisse. But Credit Suisse is not going to make it. They are just organically financially insolvent. And the $54 billion will keep people. What I can't stand, Brandon, as a market person, is the fact that their stock price actually recovered today to its pre 20% loss level from yesterday. And that's what drives me crazy, because the fact that you have to get bailed out by your national, you know, central bank to the tune of $54 billion means you don't know how to run a bank and you shouldn't be in business. And yet the stock price recovers. So investors are just globally stupid at this point and gullible, and they will believe whatever governments of the world do until it literally does collapse. It is going to take an actual collapse of a country, and hopefully it's not the United States, but it could very well be, before people realize and the government finally admits this system cannot sustain itself.
And I want to play a clip. I've played it a million times. I'm going to play a million times more so our audience understands when you say this can happen tomorrow morning. I want to play this clip again from 2008 before we say goodbye to her. Yeah. This is Congressman Paul Kanjorski back in 2008 telling us how fast things were unwinding in 2008. It can happen again, and it seems like the stage is set, and this could unwind in one day.
This is Paul Kanjorski supporting Wall Street but not Main Street with this latest $825 billion package now moving through the House.
They are right to this extent. Why did we do that? We did that because the Secretary... Look, I was there when the Secretary and the Chairman of the Federal Reserve came those days and talked with members of Congress about what was going on. It was about September 15th. Here's the facts, and we don't even talk about these things. On Thursday at about 11 o'clock in the morning, the Federal Reserve noticed a tremendous drawdown of money market accounts in the United States to the tune of $550 billion. Was being drawn out in a matter of an hour or two. The Treasury opened up its window to help. They pumped $105 billion in the system and quickly realized that they could not stem the tide. We were having an electronic run on the banks. They decided to close the operation, close down the money accounts, and announce a guarantee of $250,000 per account so there wouldn't be further panic out there. And that's what actually happened. If they had not done that, their estimation was that by 2 o'clock that afternoon, $5.5 trillion would have been drawn out of the money market system of the United States, would have collapsed the entire economy of the United States, and within 24 hours, the world economy would have collapsed.
And that's how fast it can happen. Rebecca, her website is walzerwealth.com, walzerwealth.com. And I'm guessing you're getting a lot of our people calling you and contacting you, right?
We are. They're calling our team, and I love it, and I hope we can help a lot of them. You know, we do a lot of alt planning right now. Clearly, we're very big into commodities. We love metals, as you know. We definitely work with Wes's group on buying the physical piece, and then we there's a lot of people that have IRAs that don't want to go the direction, or 401ks that don't want to go the direction of self-directed to own actual physical metals. So we certainly help with paper commodities, which we believe are safe enough because they're actually reserved in COMEX and LBMA, the vaults. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we can help people do. But more importantly, Brandon, just like your show, we really have a pulse internationally of what's going on, and know that this is just a very special, special time in history. We are going to look back and we're going to see the writing was on the wall the whole time. It was just that only a few of us could read the writing. And those of us that did read the writing and spilled the tea to everybody, I think, you know, we're going to have a good say in what comes about. Because, you know, this is, to me, you know, we have Ezekiel 38. We have a lot of stuff to happen before Revelations.
You got that and, right.
And that's looking really, really pumping up there, you know. But I think, Brandon, I think that, you know, let me just be clear. The system is now being set for the end of humanity and the end of time. It is being set. You're 100% right. And if without, and I've said this on your show many times, without God himself actually intervening and getting rid of the evil that has literally consumed every part of human society in every direction for the last, probably, this has been a setup now for at least over 150 years to get us to this point.
Yep.
And we're finally here, and this is the beginning of the end of the current system. And I think that God is going to interject and intervene, and we're going to see some collapses of some evil even beginning this year that we need in order to be able to get through our time and not be headed right into Revelations just right now.
Well, we all have family and friends, and we want to buy time. The Bible says God delays his coming because he is patient and desires that more should come to know him. And of course, we all have family and friends, extended family, and we are praying for that to be pushed off as well, so they might come to know Christ as well. So we can all pray to that end. Walzer,
well, let's get this evil over. I can't stand the evil. It's got to end. Like my husband laughs at me. I come home, I'm like, I'm so mad. When is this gonna be over? And I'm looking at my God and saying, okay, enough. Like, I cannot take it anymore. No, I'm fine. I'm fine, Brennan. It's just, I mean, come on. Like, just give me a break. Wake up, people.
It is absolutely becoming to the point where you can't believe this is all really happening. WalzerWealth.com. WalzerWealth.com. As always, thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Brandon.
You're very generous with your time. Thank you. WalzerWealth.com. And she mentioned Wes Peters. Thanks to Wes Peters for sending me the clip tonight about Yellen. Brand new clip out tonight. And then if you want to go the physical route, she talks to you about the paper route. If you want to go the physical route, as she said, you can call Wes and get that free packet if you guys want to put his number up there. They've been sponsors of ours for 18 years. I've done business with them. A ton of you have. 602-558-8585. 602-558-8585. 602-558-8585. You don't even have to call Wes. You can just text him your name and address, and he'll send you the free packet. But I wouldn't delay too much longer, folks. Again, I think God's being very gracious to give us a chance, particularly some of the folks who've waited and not heeded the warning. They're being given a chance to get something taken care of here where you're not under the thumb of these dictators. 602-558-8585. 602-558-8585. If you're interested in understanding about precious metal, numismatic, which is 1933 and older, what is an MS61, MS62, 63? He'll explain all of that versus bullion, meaning gold eagles, silver eagles that are fairly freshly minted. He'll help you understand all of that, how to put gold in your IRA. Just text him the packet. Text him your name and address. He'll send you the packet. Text him your name and address. 602-558-8585.